Hello, my loves. This is Tracy Sue, and you are listening to What Would Tracy Sue Do? Where we ask better questions about what matters. Oh, today we're going to talk about disappointment and the way that it can shatter a soul and defeat purpose. I know, it sounds super fun, right? Super fun. We've been covering some pretty heavy topics, and a lot of that is because we're going through some pretty heavy times, and because I have kept all of this insight and feeling inside my body, and it's wreaking havoc in there. And I know what a sacred thing it is to say, me too. And I'm not just talking about the movement of women speaking out against what's always been wrong. I am talking about the sacred feeling that we are not alone, that we go into our homes and we have these experiences, and some are lovely and beautiful and bring profound joy to the point of tears, and others are just so hard. I have made an interesting choice in the last few months. I feel like I'm changing very quickly because energy is changing very quickly. And I'm sure that you can feel this, that things are not as they were. I'm noticing the chinks in the armor. I'm noticing the shift in energy, the shift in relationships, the shift in identity, the shift in purpose and career and the way things work and the way we hope things work, the way they thought things work, and the realization that things are not working. What used to work is no longer working. God, and what a disappointment that is. Oh, it's soul crushing to think that I've done all of this work, all of this trying, all of this obedience to my inner soul and the universe and God and social rules, only to have everything that was working stop working. I recently took a fuck it year. I took a fuck it year where I drank way too much. I had a boyfriend who was completely incapable of reciprocating generosity. You know, to sum it up, he was kind of a whiny baby, just couldn't even take care of himself, let alone provide for my needs. But he was a good drinking buddy, and he made me laugh so hard all the time with these really smart jokes and insights. And I loved him. And what a profound disappointment that when my fuck it year was over, I had to move forward and he wasn't coming with me. I've been single for 7 years, and I think this was the relationship that meant the most to me. There have not been many. And frankly, that's because there have not been men worthy of relationship material for me in terms of compatibility. Not that they're all bad men, certainly not. No, just not for me. Not compatible to meet my needs. So when I ended my fuck it year, well, let me say what a fuck it year is and why it happened. Oh my God, I worked so hard. Oh, I worked so hard trying to make everything worked the way it was supposed to work, trying to follow all of the business formulas, trying to make it in a dream that I had of, becoming Elizabeth Gilbert or something like that, where, you know, I would write this book, The Year of Yes, which was so profoundly raw and vulnerable that shook me to my core, that exposed the deepest places in my heart and my soul, only to have it fall flat. Oh my God, so productive. I wrote and published 6 books. I launched a publishing company. I launched a life and business coaching practice. And all of that marketing, oh my goodness, I built so many marketing platforms from business cards to websites. I learned how to design websites out of sheer necessity to the point where I stopped hiring other designers because I was better than them and was able to charge money for that. And things were going great. They were going how they were supposed to be going. And then, like truly people, you don't even understand. I made $35,000 in 1 month, the very month before we elected Donald Trump as president of the United States. And my business completely halted in every single area. See, when we have leadership that promises hope, that drives on hope and positivity, and we can do this and we're getting better and we're progressing as humanity and there's equality and equal chance for everyone, people buy into hope. So they invest in their dreams. And my business was all about investing in dreams with this positive hope that you could create the life you want. And when we elected Donald Trump, whose platform was anger and disgusting displays of sexism, harassment, violence, objectification of women, who stripped human beings of their human beingness by labeling them as illegal immigrants or whatever, black people or minorities or white people or whatever, like just labeling and distancing humans from their humanity by using hate words and violent words and energetic assault against hope, against goodness, against equality, against everyone having a fair shot. Reversing those glorious 8 years when I was able to take a breath and my clients were able to have the dream that maybe, just maybe, they could have a life designed the way they wanted. It was a crushing blow to my business. I went from 1 month of $35,000 to nothing. It was a crushing blow to my own hope. God, how disappointing and devastating it is to think this is still where we are. How disappointing and devastating it is to recognize that my dating pool, that my family, that my loved ones, I'm a white woman in America. I'm a pretty white woman in America. And the amount of sexual harassment and disrespect and energetic violence I have experienced since Donald Trump is atrocious. It is disappointing. It is anger worthy. It is disgusting. This display of alpha masculinity, this toxicness, this hatred towards women, the idea that they would have to share, and their resentment about sharing is repulsive. So as my business crashed to zero, when I was making I was making good money and I was doing good in the world, everything that was working stopped working. Because when you no longer have an energy of hope in the world, of progress, of moving forward, of kindness, then the kind suffer. Kind suffer when it is dismissed as worthless. And I am so disappointed that my children have said, "I hate being white because I'm so ashamed of us." I am so disappointed at the way men have been treating me. I am so disappointed that the responsibility for that is thrust on me. Oh, I must have attracted it. No, I did not attract it. I am a pretty white blonde woman in America. I am not just attractive to narcissistic, disgusting, arrogant, egotistical men. I am attractive to all men who are heterosexual or bisexual. I attract all men, not just the bad ones. But the bad ones, see, they feel they have permission now, because they do have permission to let their baser instinct self run wild, where before they were at least ashamed of it, they no longer are. That is not my responsibility. That is their responsibility, and I will not take responsibility for this. And that is the fundamental change that I have gone through in the last, I would say, 6 months. First, there was shock for 2 years, just shock. This is who we are still? This is who they are still? I thought we were moving somewhere good, somewhere better, somewhere that gave me a shot, somewhere where hope and kindness was welcome and enforced. After that part of shock wore off and I got angry, the reaction to my justified, necessary, responsible anger was also shocking. The women who want me to shut the fuck up and stop messing with the system, as if our silence has ever gotten us anything but more abuse and more abuse and more abuse for millennia. Millennia. That, I think, is the most disappointing of all. Your anger is holding you back. No, my anger is not holding me back. My anger is pushing me forward to create change and to resist hatred and injustice and arrogance and selfishness. See, I decided I wasn't going to lie. I wasn't going to lie for people anymore. I wasn't going to pretend that my husband's a good guy and ignore the fact that he is being a selfish, selfish dick. I wasn't going to lie and pretend that it's okay that my brother drop into my life every now and then to tell me that I shouldn't do it, have a business. No, I'm doing it wrong. I wasn't going to lie about people's actual behavior or the language they use to try to shut me up and accept my lot in life. God, and the result? Oh, such a disappointment, such a sadness and a grief, a shocking, paralyzing grief. Because when I see someone for who they are, I can't make excuses about their good intentions, because their good intentions are not there. And it's the evidence of their physical behavior and their words, angry, sexist, heinous, horrible, invasive, energetically assaulting words, that I will not excuse. Silence is not peace. The demons can only survive in the dark. Turn on the light. That's the first words of my book, The Year of Yes. See, if we don't talk about the travesty of what we're doing right now, of how things have been, then we feel alone and ashamed because we think it's happening only to us. So what I'm saying to you right now is me too. Me too. I'm so disappointed in us. I'm so disappointed in my family and the religion that I come from, which disallows women their own autonomy, which puts women in a box that says, you're a housewife and that's it, which makes women just conflicted. The conflict in me, like the mommy wars, they took place inside my soul. Follow the rules, Tracy. Oh, well, the rules are different. Mom, husband, You have different rules for me and I can't win. I'm not going to play that game anymore. And if the only thing I can do to stop participating is to remove myself from a situation, then that's what's going to happen. I won't lie or pretend that your intentions are good, that you have been kind when you have been selfish. The selfishness to me is astounding. When I look at the behavior of men, I am astounded at the selfishness. I'm also pretty pissed off that I have to cage that in words like, not all men are bad. God, should that not be totally assumed that not all men are bad? Can we not talk about toxic masculinity and the total spiritual bankruptcy of men without saying, oh, not all men are bad. All men have created this culture. All men have not rejected this culture and fiercely defended women. Because if they had, we wouldn't have these problems. I have a right to make a living. Our guest workers have a right to make a living. There is unfairness and unjustness in the world. And it is caused by, I don't know, let's look at the numbers. 1%. That's how much women have of property, of money. Why? Because men made laws forbidding that we have that. A lot has changed in 30 years, and yet nothing has changed. See, my ex-husband was raised to believe that I should be obedient, and that's what a good wife is. I was raised to believe that as well, and I resisted it more than he did, which caused extreme conflict. And guys, girls, you know the girl, the one who's like your BFF when she's not in a relationship, and then when she gets in a relationship, it's peace out. The amount of serving others that I have done in the last 7 years is astounding. The lack of reciprocity, such a disappointment. The way the word love is used to manipulate me into doing work for other people, egregious, shocking, disgusting. The trap, the trap that's laid so that women can't win. We can't win our own lives, even. We can't win physical safety. We carry the burden of society and the burden of raising children. We're expected to hold up equal responsibility for living. Not equal. Let me take that back. The burden of responsibility, economic, social, familial responsibility, while making significantly less money and having significantly fewer resources. Sorry, folks, you're not going to positive think your way around this. Positive thinking does not change reality. Thinking that we will change this to something better is what changes reality. Happy people do not ignore their discontent. The great psychologist Maslow, he studied happy people, people who described themselves as happy. What he discovered is very, very, very important. He discovered that happy people do not ignore their discontent. They do not walk around pretending everything is fantastic, lying to themselves, lying for other people to excuse them from bad behavior. They do not pretend. They do not act as if. They do not use only positive language. They do not ignore their discontent. They honestly face their discontent and the cause of their discontent, and they acknowledge it and make changes. So if they are unhappy in their marriage, they get a divorce. If they're unhappy in their job, they change jobs. If they're unhappy in their relationships, they voice their unhappiness and insist on change. Happy, functioning people do not ignore nor pretend that they are happy when they are not. And that's What kind of upsets me about this whole law of attraction spiritual movement that I definitely have played a part in, I most certainly am part of this movement, this community, this, in many ways, more hopeful way of living. But there are some pitfalls when you are so delusional that you cannot see your own situation and you will not acknowledge the truth that is evident around you, then you can't make changes for an authentic, happy, fulfilled life. Delusion does not create a reality that is actually going to work for you or anyone else. The delusion that white men have good intentions does not make them have good intentions. See, I've been single for 7 years, and I really believed men were better than this. I truly did. Because I'm heterosexual. I love men. I want you to win. I want you to be better. I want nothing more than for you to be kind and generous and loving and caring and take responsibility for the people in your life and providing for them and protecting them and making them cherished. Oh, I want nothing more than that. I have dated well over 100 men, and I have gone on dates with well over 100 men. First dates in 7 years. That does not mean I have had sex with them. I definitely have not had sex with them. Well, I've had sex with some of them, but like 1% of the men who have wanted to have sex with me, like police. I have interacted with hundreds of men online, in person, since being single. And I can tell you that they are spiritually bankrupt and floundering in their own selfish egos. Most of them. They are either helpless and want a woman to step into their lives and do all the work for them, or they are manipulative, narcissistic, using the woman for whatever it is they desire. I can't tell you how many men have wanted me to be their wife just so that I could be the pretty girl on their arm. It has nothing to do with me as a person, as a human being. It's just a projection. I am their fantasy, they think. I can't tell you how many dates I have been on where the man has asked me nothing about myself. He's been entirely uninterested in me as a human being. He is far too fixated on himself and what he needs and what he thinks that I can do for him. See, I bring a light into the world and my energy is fantastic. And men always say that, oh, I love your energy. Yeah, my energy is hard won, motherfucker. My energy is based in a lot of self-improvement work and a lot of self-examination and growth. And it's been fucking painful and painstaking and consistent. That's why you love my energy, because you think that you can suck my energy for your own needs. Literally, men have spent 2 hours on a date with me and not asked me what I do for a living, not asked me about my children, not asked me about my upbringing, my history, my relationship past. And they have asked me out again because they thought it was a fantastic date, because they got to talk about the most important thing to them, themselves. And I have a very open way about myself, which allows people to tell me everything about themselves practically immediately, because I'm a non-judgmental presence. And it's such a relief for them to be able to unburden themselves. But you know what? It just tells me exactly who you are. I had a guy, he was the most repulsive person I've met in a very long time. He thought I never wanted to see him again because he was lying about his situation, about the fact that he was not legally divorced because he didn't want to give his wife any money and he didn't want to have to pay child support. So he just stayed married. So he had this girlfriend and there was all this tragedy and suicides in his life, and it didn't bring a tear to his eye, but the fact that he had to share his dog with his ex-girlfriend made him cry. He thought I didn't believe him. No, I believed every word. I just found it repulsively disgusting. This had never entered his mind. I am so disappointed that I put so much work into my business and it crashed into nothing overnight. In the year of yes, I put myself out there in the rawest, most vulnerable way possible. I didn't edit the hard, embarrassing, shameful parts. I put it out there, and I did it because I know what feeling alone looks like, and because my soul would not let me not do it. I had to do it. See, I have a compulsion, and that compulsion is to write and communicate, to tie things together so that people can understand them, to break things down so that they're simple enough to create change. And I put so much work into that, and it was the scariest thing I have ever done. And it is so disappointing that it didn't pay off the way I wanted it to pay off. It was an incredibly traumatic and painful experience. There were professional jealousies that were painful. There was judgment that was painful. This was an unburdening of my psychic garbage, my heart, my pain, and to sell that for $6 made me feel like I had wasted all of that energy, wasted all of my time, my effort, my heart. And I have followed all the rules. I have followed all the formulas. I have applied for all the jobs. I have gotten the certificates. I have talked to the right people, and I have networked my butt off, and I have built a marketing platform, and I have worked my ass off in generously giving to the world. From the days when I did the Girl Revolution and talked about parenting, I changed the way people think about girls for millions of people. That's just true. Okay, maybe not millions. Tens of thousands, at least. I put all of this positivity into the world. In my personal relationships, I have invested so much that it has been harmful to me. I have ignored and withstood the mocking from my family for having different religious beliefs. I have withstood being my dad's token feminist liberal said as a curse word and being literally yelled at every time I see him, to the point where I have PTSD here. I don't want to see him. I don't want to be subjected to his anger that has nothing to do with me. He's never asked me about my spiritual or political beliefs. None of them have. And when their little plan that I be a stay-at-home mom didn't work out economically and I need some help, they're angry at me because I am an example of how dangerous what they require of women is to women and children. I have lost people along the way when I have tried to change this codependent, help everyone at the sacrifice of my own self. I've given my last $20 to other people because they needed it. I have allowed people to steal from me because I feel bad that they don't have enough when they have far more than me. I have been extraordinarily generous with people. And when I start noticing things like, in my friendships, that again, the conversation's always about them. And when it turns to me, they've got to go. They have something really important to do. So I made this energetic rule that my relationships have to be reciprocal. And my truest friend, someone so important to me, someone I had invested so much time and energy lifting up, after 9 years, she just unfriended me on Facebook. I am still grieved by this. It is so painful that that could even happen. Recently, I made a new rule that my growth cannot be perceived as a violation of the relationship, that the people in my life would be supportive, non-critical, non-judgmental, and would allow me room to grow without making that a violation of our relationship. Because that's what my family and my ex-husband have done, and culture has done. My growth has been perceived as horrible for our relationship, a violation of such. So I wrote this down on December 15th, and within 15 days, I was shocked by the vicious, angry, mean, hateful, judgmental criticism of a friend. I just didn't see it coming. And it was instant. 15 days later, just this anger had bubbled up in her about me and my choices and my growth and my process and how dare I, because it was triggering her own anger. I went through this phase where for the last 2 years, I wrote down everything that had happened, everything significant. And for 2 years, all I did was help other people. I helped them clean their homes. I fed them when they needed feeding. I took care of them spiritually and emotionally and physically. The whole time, I was broke and struggling. And when I found myself saying, okay, well, now I need some help. I need help. And I started cleaning out my house and I looked around and I noticed who wasn't there, where there was no reciprocity. And when I asked for reciprocity, I was met with anger that I had changed the rules. No, see, I was meant to be the helper. I was not meant to be the weak one. I was not meant to be the one in need. I was not meant to be the one who was helped. Because my motivation, and here's the law of attraction in this, my motivation has been to help people. And in order for me to achieve that goal, what do I need? I need people who need help. My purpose is no longer to help people. I have a purpose. I have places to go. I'm done being broke, sacrificing my money for other people's needs. I'm done spending all of my time taking care of other people like a good little Mormon girl. I have done this to the point of harm. And you know what I was expecting? I was expecting a generous return on my investment as promised by every spiritual thing out there. My need to be helpful was met. But it turns out that's not how reciprocity works. I have struggled pretty hard for the last 2 years, and I have been met with anger from the people in my life for being needy instead of being the one who carries the burden for other people. I have an emotionally vast experience. I am not one thing. And to say these things in public is a fucking risk, dude. It comes with consequences. To say things that I said in the year of yes comes with consequences. To expose yourself vulnerably to the world can be met with harshness, criticism, judgment, anger, abuse, energetic violence, and I'm doing it because my soul won't let me not do it. All other doors have slammed shut. I did all the right things. I followed all of the formulas. I did the mantras. I did the meditations. I did the praying. I did the business formula and the funnels. I did the networking. I did the helping others. I did the generosity. I did the tithe. I did all the right things. But fear has kept me from doing this. Fear. Fear of what might happen, how you might perceive this, how angry other people will be because I am using my outside voice about things that matter and how people who I love and who claim to love me have reacted to my growth, my experience, my process, my pain, my disappointment, my sadness, my grief, my anger has been excruciatingly disappointing. Excruciatingly disappointing. And in the face of all of this disappointment, after such hard work, after such dedication, after so much trying, I can't tell you how difficult it is to believe that things will work differently. See, I've been on a bad luck streak where all the doors have closed, even though I'm doing the right thing over and over and over and over and over. I've been traumatized by being used, disrespected, dishonored. It's so hard to get that hope back because we're not living in an energetically hopeful world right now. The energetic and spiritual consequence of Donald Trump is real. It's very, very real. When we have the energy of this selfish anger, we cannot move forward because that is backward. When we have the energy of hope, it enables all of us to grasp that energy and get out of bed in the morning and think, yeah, good things are going to happen today. And I'm struggling real hard, and maybe you are too. I think you are too. I'm struggling real hard to grasp onto any string of hope. And I know money is a big struggle for me right now, but I know people who have so much money that it's not a struggle at all, and they are struggling for some hope too. What we do politically and socially and culturally matters because it matters whether we have hope. That energy is contagious. It's in the collective consciousness. And right now, we have an energy of anger, shock, disappointment, grief, and worse, hopelessness, a feeling of defeat. I am doing my best to get back in the game, and I'm doing it slow. And every week, I do this because I made a commitment to myself and my soul, and I'm hoping that my body will respond in a positive way, because this level of hopelessness is unsustainable. We have to face the truth about where we are. We have 2 years until the election. We can't stay in this state of anger and hopelessness. It is having a devastating effect on our humanity and our ability to even experience compassion and our ability to wake up in the morning and think that maybe something good can happen. Maybe we can make something good happen if we just try. I mean, think about that. I tried so hard. You tried so hard. And it was defeat and disappointment. It is taking an incredible act of faith to try again. And I know you're feeling this. It's hard to articulate. Maybe you've had abrupt endings of relationships that you cared deeply about, that you tried really hard in. Maybe you got your heart broken. Maybe you had business ventures that just didn't work the way they said it was going to work. Maybe you have been defeated by the lack of love from your families, the lack of kindness from people you have cared for and taken care of, the lack of loyalty. Maybe you're struggling to understand what is happening to you and you're feeling alone. And that's why I am telling you that you are not alone. That when we face the truth, we can make changes. And when we pretend, we cannot. Right now, what is happening to us is hopelessness because that is being allowed. What is happening is wrong. It is fundamentally, objectively wrong. We can't allow it to continue. It's not just politics. It is the collective consciousness. It is our hope that is at stake here. It is equality and kindness and justice that is at stake here. It is sharing that is at stake here. It is fundamentally unbelievable to me how little people want to share and how upset they are that anyone would suggest that they share, that anyone would suggest that your gun rights are more valuable than the lives of children and students. That is not hope. That is so devastating to us as a culture, as a collective consciousness. This is real, my loves. This is real. We cannot allow hope, compassion, friendship, generosity, loyalty, sharing, caring to be systematically dismantled so that we can go backwards to a selfish, angry, entitled patriarchy. You're not entitled to more than anyone else. You have taken it from brute force, but you are not entitled to it. And that you think you have done all of this by yourself, all of this achievement, because you worked hard. Yeah, everybody works hard. Not just you. Everyone. I am angry. I am sad. I am experiencing deep grief and I am struggling through hopelessness. And you are too. And I want to remind you that 99% of it is just showing up. Just making one commitment. I've made one commitment. I'm going to do this podcast every week and I'm going to get real and raw on it. And we're going to talk about things that matter so that we don't feel alone. One commitment. And I'm encouraging you to pick one thing that you will insist on being hopeful about. The energy is changing. It's changing dramatically. It's changing quickly. It's overwhelming. But we have to grasp on to that tiny, tiny string of hope. And we have to vote accordingly. We have to hold people accountable for their lack of good intentions, for their lack of generosity, for their lack of kindness. So my friends, that's what I have for you today. God bless CBD. God bless CBD, because that's how I'm making it through this stress and all of these overwhelming feelings and the way my body is physically responding to this stress and trauma and anxiety is to take CBD as a maintenance dose, like not even as an acute dose anymore. Not even like, oh, well, I have pain now, so I'm going to take this. No, at this point, I am taking it just to keep my muscles from seizing up, just to keep my stress level at a doable state where my body is reacting to this. My body is reacting to this hopelessness, to the struggle, to the heaviness, to the burden. And maybe you need something like that too. So I have a product, Elixinol, all kinds of creams that I put on my hands because they're feeling arthritic and my muscles that are stressed and tight and my neck. Oh my God, my neck is so tight. My hands are going numb. My body is so tight. And right now, CBD is providing the solution for me. It's legal in all 50 states, and I invite you to try it and see if it doesn't help you also. You can get some at tracysoux.com/CBD. That's TRACEESIOUX.com/CBD. They have face creams. They have creams for muscles. They have creams for headaches. They have creams for all kinds of things. And they also have oral dosing. And that's what I enjoy on a daily basis to keep my stress level in check. I would love for you to tell me that I'm not alone. For you to, I don't know, post the show on your Facebook page and a comment that says, I'm not alone, because I'm on this one end and you're on the other. And I need to know that I am not alone in my struggle for hope. You can find all kinds of subscribe buttons on my website, tracysue.com. I invite you to do that so you don't miss this conversation and so that we can create a community that talks about real things in a real way that allows us to be vulnerable with each other and to tell the truth so that we can create change. And I love you, and I'm here, and I see you, and thank you for listening. I will be back next week, as is my commitment.